You can't hear me? Oh, what I see. I thought you said, what'd you say? I can't hear anything, so I was thinking, what sound? It sounded really loud to me. So. The Hobbit. The Hobbit. It's, yeah, I wouldn't go. It's terrible. I'm kidding. No, it was all right. It was good, so. Wait till you see. So. All right. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. I think, it's a sign you're getting old whenever you're sitting here singing these Christmas songs, and I was kind of like getting a little emotional. I don't know, there's something for this community here is it is such a big part of my family. There's so many of you guys that I've known for so long that I don't know, there's something. I think it's just when you get old you cry, right? There's some correlation there that as you get older you get more emotional. I always wonder why my dad cried all the time. And what'd you say?
Yeah, I think I'm just a sissy. I think that's what it is.
But we'll call it wisdom. It makes me feel better. So Merry Christmas to you guys. It's really, really special to me to see you guys today. And think back over the last year, all the things, neat things that have happened, and to look forward to 2013. Guys, to just take a second and look at this. This is one of the Psalms written by David. He writes, "My soul waits in silence for God only. From Him is my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I shall not be greatly shaken. My soul waits in silence." I've got this foundation that is so strong. It's something I can put everything into. All of my worries and concerns of life, I know. I know that's on a strong foundation. I shall not be greatly shaken. In the NIV, we'll talk about this in a few minutes. In the NIV, instead of saying my soul waits in silence, it says, "Truly, my soul finds rest in God." It's kind of neat to think about this idea of being resting, and that could almost be interpreted in the same words or similar as waiting in silence, resting and waiting in silence. Before we go any further, I think this time of year can be crazy stressful. So there's some of you in here that are just pumped right now. You are just having such an awesome time, looking forward to the next few days. Everything is just great. But there's some of you that are completely wigged out right now. Right? I won't make you raise your hand. Finances, you had to end up spending more money than you wanted to spend, and that's got you worked up, and you've got some credit card bill that's eating you up. You're going to have to go to your mother-in-law's house and the whole time wonder about what is she saying this year about how much she dislikes you, right? You guys know what I'm talking about, maybe? Hopefully not. Hopefully not. So before we go any further, this is going to be the hardest part on the little kids in the room. I want us to take just a moment to have some silence. I want you to be able to look at these words and really think and embrace this concept that your foundation in God can be so strong that you can wait in silence and be fulfilled. How many of you guys like waiting? Does anybody like waiting? Robin, do you like waiting? You like waiting? Oh, depends on what you're waiting on. Do you like to wait, Robin? Take a second, about a minute here. You guys just take some silence. Read those words. Let that sound. God, help us today to learn something about waiting. Help us today to be content, to use you as want and drive down the paths that we so often try to go down and we try to hurry down whenever you might be nudging us to just wait. God, we give you this day, we give you this time of year. We ask that we will please you as we praise your Son and praise his birth and praise the year that you've given us. We love you. Advent. If you look it up on the internet, dictionary.com, Advent means the arrival of a notable person or a thing or an event. It's the arrival of something. Okay? Now, we almost never use this word Advent other than at Christmas time. Do you guys use Advent? Is it a word in your dictionary, in your vocabulary you use except Christmas time? Right, not me. The arrival of a notable person. Thing or event. So the Advent season, it's all about the anticipation of and the waiting for the arrival. So looking forward to it. I actually had a couple of different people want me to teach on this year about what my family does during the Advent season, because we have one of these calendars that you hang up on the wall. It's got little pockets in it, and every day the kids pull out a little thing, and there's something that goes on that day. Sometimes they get something, sometimes they have to do something. They made dinner for us yesterday, right? Yeah. It's chicken noodle soup. I whipped it up in 20 minutes. Amazing. It's good. The Advent season is the anticipation of and the waiting for the arrival. Nobody likes to wait. My mom, when she was young, she was in a family of nine. Christmas time was a big deal because they really rarely got anything, a gift or anything like that at all. It was a very strange thing for them. Yeah, she's 73, so that was 60 years ago. One thing my mom was good at, she was good at anything with her hands. She was good at wrapping. Now, if you've got a locksmith, one of the great things about a locksmith is they can fix the locks on your house. One of the worst things about a locksmith is they can get into any house, right? It's both sides, right? If you're a good locksmith, there's not a lock, you're not going to be able to just blast through another lock. Well, if you're a good present wrapper, not only can you wrap presents, but you can unwrap presents. My mom hated to wait, and so what she would do is wait till there was an opportunity, and she would unwrap her Christmas presents prior to Christmas and see what it was and play with it and look at it and those kinds of things, and then she could wrap it back to her, and no one ever knew the difference. She couldn't wait. When my brother and I were young, as soon as my mom would leave, we were out in the country, and you could always tell when someone was coming into the house because you could hear their tires coming down the gravel driveway. So no one snuck into our house. You always knew when someone was coming. And so as soon as mom was gone, boom, we're in mom's closet digging through, around Christmas time, that is, digging through to see what we can find. And I still remember the only time we found something was that we got one of these round metal saucers. We found all the way back behind all the clothing. It's red. It was pretty cool. And I can remember then having to live through the lie on Christmas Day of oh, what a surprise. We got a sled saucer, right? Some people just can't wait. How many of you guys cannot wait so much on gift during Christmas time that you can't even wait to give the gift? That you actually give your kids the gift before Christmas? Anybody done that this year yet? That you just can't stand it and they already get something, right? I suppose we kind of do that with Advent, sort of plain, right? I was always amazed a few years ago how sometimes my friends at school would come to school before school even let out, and they'd have some cool pair of Nike, or I'm sorry, it would have been the Adidas basketball shoes or something they would have on, and I'd say, "Oh, that's nice shoes, that's my Christmas gift this year." But it's not Christmas. Yeah, mom and dad couldn't wait, right? It's tough to wait. Got a little video I want you guys to see.
Alright, here's the deal. Marshmallow, for you. You can either wait, and I'll give you another one if you wait, or you can eat it now. When I come back, I'll give you another one, so then you'll have to. But stay in here and stay in the chair till I come back, okay? All right. It's up to you. You can have it now or you can wait.
Study. Have you guys studied the marshmallow study before? Have you heard of that? It's a very, very famous study. It was done originally around 1970. 1970 was the first time that this Walter Mischel and Eddie Ebbeson did this. The biggest study that became most famous actually happened in 72. And the average child was about 4 years old. And they tried to get these kids to wait 15 minutes. Can you imagine how difficult that was? And they graded the kids on how long they were able to wait, so they were filming them and watching them to determine how long they were able to wait. Now, the interesting thing is that was in 72. In 88 and 90, they did two follow-up studies. And the way this happened was that one of the researchers, the kids in this research study were kids he actually knew. And he was watching these kids grow up, and he's kind of thinking, you know, it's interesting. I kind of feel like the kids that struggled in the marshmallow test seem to also be struggling today. Now they're in high school, graduating out of high school. I'm going to go back and see how these kids are doing. So he went back and did a study. He looked at a couple of different things. He looked at one of the things they talked about was basically how competent they were. And I don't know how they measured this, but they just said, like, how well are they doing in life? How well are they doing in terms of accomplishing things and getting things done, the things that our society values? And they also took a more objective measure, being their SAT scores. And they were stunned to find out that there was this amazing correlation between kids that at age 4 couldn't get through delayed gratification, these same kids were having trouble later on accomplishing things in life. So there was this really, really strong study between the two. Then they waited another almost 20 years, actually a little more than 20 years, 2011. They went back one last time and they re-looked at these same kids. So now these kids are in their 40s. Guess what? It has continued on. This inability to be able to delay gratification, even though you know something better is coming, this inability to delay gratification is something that, if not taught at a very young age, it tends to drive all the way through life. Very, very interesting thing. When we think about waiting in terms of the Advent, we're really talking about something that has already happened, right? 2,000 years ago, they knew something was coming. You can see here in Zechariah, it was written, you know, this was hundreds of years before Jesus came. It says, "Rejoice greatly, daughter of Zion. Shout, daughter of Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you." They had this vision of what this was going to look like. Your king comes to you. They know what kings look like. Righteous and victorious, lowly, and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. What? A king's coming, riding on a donkey? They had to be questioning when they would read this. What in the world is going on here? What's happening? But they knew that was coming, and it came 2,000 years ago. Another waiting we've got now is this waiting on the completeness. We're waiting on this second return, right? So we've got two Advents we talk about in church. One that's already happened in the past. One that's coming. That's coming. And these tend to be the things we focus on. But today, I want us to think a little bit more, take just a few minutes here to getting into this concept of waiting on God to lead the way. In these questions that Doug and I got a few weeks ago, some of you may have read that, some of the responses. It's something that has taken me a long time to get comfortable with, is to wait. And I think people around me actually can get quite annoyed with me because I'm maybe too comfortable with waiting. But I have learned so many times that when I run ahead of God, and even when I try to read into what God's doing, instead of waiting on Him, that it just doesn't go well for me. Waiting, waiting. It is so hard to do. It is so hard to wait on God. If you guys think about it, how many of you have something, you don't have to raise your hand or anything, but how many of you have something right now that is huge in your life? Absolutely huge. It's a personal issue you're working through. It's a problem at work. It might be a relationship, your marriage. It might be an addiction. Something that is just dragging you down, and you're so desperately trying to find any avenue you can to get through it because you just can't stand to wait and let God take care of it. With my own job, do some of you remember me talking? I've mentioned this two or three times, so I hope you remember this, that about a year ago I was on a panic path to change jobs. I was really getting quite frustrated with my job. I didn't really want to wait anymore. I felt like I tried to read God into it and say, I think God wants me to change jobs. And so I just went for it. And I started sending out resumes and talking to people and making every connection I could possibly make. And I'd get emails back from different people. Hey, I'm going to set up an interview with you. This is going to happen. I was feeling pretty smug about the whole thing because you feel loved, right? That's what you're looking for sometimes in a situation, someone to love you. And so I was feeling loved. And then nothing happened. Nothing happened. And I can look back now and realize that it was such a blessing that I didn't switch jobs. About the middle of the year, things started changing in my own work. Things that I couldn't really anticipate. And that waiting turned it to be something that now I'm so glad I didn't leave. And at the time I was searching, I was trying to go to Cummins, and the world at Cummins could look no better. There were roses everywhere, right? And for those of you who are familiar with Cummins, the last couple of months weren't roses, right? Laying people off, lots of hurt feelings. People that were telling me 6 months ago, you gotta come to work here, this is the greatest place ever. I went to them 2 months ago and asked them again, and they were like, I wouldn't come here. Not right now. Right? so, so difficult. Oops, come on. In Psalm 62, this is an expanded version of what I started with. It says, there is another verse up here. There we go. Just to pop up. This is from the New American Standard Bible. It says, "My soul waits in silence for only God. From Him is my salvation. He's what saves me. He only is my rock and my salvation. My stronghold, I shall not be greatly shaken." In verse 5 it says, "My soul waits in silence for God only. For my hope is from Him. He is only is my rock and my salvation. My stronghold, I shall not be shaken. On God my salvation and my glory rest." On God my salvation and my glory rest. The rock of my strength, my refuge is in God. Trust in Him at all times, and people. Pour out your heart before Him. God is a refuge for us." And then, as I told you earlier, in the NIV, we'll just look at these first two verses. It's translated, "Truly my soul." Yeah, "Truly my soul finds rest." Am I getting myself mixed up here? Yeah, I got it right. Yeah, it says, "Truly my soul finds rest in God. My salvation comes from Him." This idea of peace in God. The idea of waiting on God to give us the rest we need. How many of you guys have heard of Dietrich Bonhoeffer? Okay. Anybody read a book from him or read anything from him? What'd you say? Okay. All right. Thank you. So Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he's a guy that Will, painful. Did you guys hear it? It cracked like a nut. It's like, yeah, I would have liked to have you come up. So Dietrich Bonhoeffer, there's a book called God is in the Manger, and that's why I got to thinking about him. I listened to a podcast by Greg Boyd a couple weeks ago. I think actually it was an old podcast that they had repodcast because he was sick, but I was glad they did. And Greg talked about reading this book, God is in the Manger. In fact, I got a year to chew on it, but I think it might not be a bad book for us to read as a community next year. It's a short book. It's got daily readings in it. And actually, he didn't write it as the book, God in the Manger. It's actually a series of letters that he wrote that have been compiled together into this story. But Dietrich was born, I believe, in 1909. Wealthy family in Germany. He became a professor at a university. And by 1933, he was starting to get pretty bold about God. And in 1933, he was doing a radio address. Hitler is beginning to put together this Führer concept, this idea, because Führer just means leader. But it was this idea that it was going to be a leader that was going to be really more godlike, more on a higher plane and an unquestionable plane. And Dietrich saw this and was giving a radio address basically saying he didn't think this was a good idea. Well, he didn't even get to finish the radio address because they shut him off, and he began to get all kinds of threats from the government, and he abandoned ship and ended up leaving the country. But by the early 40s, so now we're well into World War II, he comes back. He starts having this feeling that he needs to be in Germany. He had a fiance, so he was pledged to be married. But he went back and he got with some sort of radical Christians, and they continued to push this concept. And in 1943, he got put in prison. Okay, so the government had enough of his concepts and ideas. He gets put in prison, and that is where the writings for this book, God is in a Manger, came from. They were letters he was writing while he was in prison. I think it's really a blessing that the letters ever got out of prison. It's kind of amazing to me that actually happened. This is the letter he wrote on December 13th, 1943. He's writing this to his fiance. Now, I want you guys to imagine, this guy is a man of God. He's outspoken. He's living the life of a Christian, and as a result, he's in prison. Look what he writes. "Celebrating Advent means being able to wait. Waiting is an art that our impatient age has forgotten. Greg Boyd said, if waiting is an art that the impatient age has forgotten in 1943, then what's it like today? Because it seems to be, that is an area where I would argue maybe our culture isn't moving forward. It seems as though our ability to have delayed gratification is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. It's just my perception. But that's what Greg said. I agree with him. Going on, it says, it wants to break open the ripe fruit when it has hardly finished planting the shoot. But all too often, greedy eyes are only deceived. The fruit that seemed so precious is still green on the inside. And disrespectful hands ungratefully toss it aside. Toss aside what has so disappointed them. Whoever does not know the austere blessedness of waiting, that is, of hopefully doing without, will never experience the full blessing of fulfillment. Chew on that. Whoever does not know the austere blessedness of waiting. How do you guys see waiting as a blessedness? I can tell you, in the times in my life when I've waited, when I've chilled out, and I've not moved forward in an area that I wanted desperately to move forward on, but I put on the brakes, it has paid off for me. At the end of that letter, he writes to his fiancée, for the greatest, most tender, and most profound things in life, we must. We talk about this second coming. I've heard people say that they are so excited for the second coming to come. They can't wait for it to get here because they're kind of sick of this world. And I think that in that case, we might be missing what was written right here. Whoever does not know the austere blessedness of waiting, the beauty, absolute beauty that comes through waiting. In a tangible sense, you guys have heard this story, but I'm going to share it again some of you have heard this story. A few years ago, Jill and I decided we needed a new home. That's the way we do it, right? Because our 1,200 square foot home, which is probably in the top 1 or 2% of the larger homes in the world, wasn't big enough for us. And so we needed this new home. And we went off and started planning it all out. We finally found the home, the location where we were going to build the home. And I was pumped because I was doing sales at the time. I was envisioning that the basement of the house would become a training center. And I was like, obviously this home's a great thing. So I'll turn it into a training center. And we'll be able to have small groups. We're going to have a big backyard. We're going to have campfires. And so, it'll be a retreat. We'll get away and do cool things there. I just had all these things going on. And Jill and I were pretty much on the same page. Okay with it. So from a marriage perspective, we were okay with this. We were ready to move on it. And I did what my friend Brian Leach told me was one of the most foolish things a person could ever do. I decided to challenge God in the process. So I said, hey God, I'm in sales. I know how much I'm supposed to sell each month. Next month, if my sales achieve the quota that I'm supposed to get, I'll take that as a sign that I should move forward. And I said, and God, if I don't achieve my quota, I said, I'll take that as a sign that I shouldn't move forward. Pretty easy, And I wouldn't recommend you guys use this approach very often. It's really not a tried and true approach. Oftentimes you'll leave yourself questioning things. But I did a really funny thing. I remember praying to God and saying, God, don't make it questionable. Blow it out. It'll be the biggest month I've ever had. Or make it terrible. Make it clear. I don't want it at the end of this month. I'd been hitting between 80 and 120% of my sales every month. I'd never missed a month. So I was always somewhere between 80 and 120%, somewhere in that area each month. That month, at the end of the month, I was at 5%. My boss is calling me, what is going on? And I'm saying, I want to say, well, it's God's fault, doggone it, Don't blame me. I put this in his hands and he did it. No, and so... Jill and I can look back now and see the blessedness of waiting on that, not going that route. We ended up getting to keep our kids in a school system that we actually really wanted to keep them in. We ended up getting to stay in a neighborhood that we wanted to stay in. We ended up saving some money because it didn't cost us anywhere near as much. We put an addition on our house instead, and that was a lot easier to be done. In the end, the blessedness of waiting was quite clear. Oh, what have I done? All right. So Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he never got out of prison. April 8th, 1945, 3 weeks before Hitler committed his own suicide. So Hitler's regime was dying. The end was coming. It was very clear that things weren't going well. One of Hitler's last things that he did was had many, many of the folks that he put in prison executed. And Dietrich was hanged on April 8th, 1945, and these are his last words. He said, "This is the end, but for me, the beginning of life." Can you imagine having the ability to have that kind of mindset and that ability to wait and wait and wait, to know your fiancé is on the outside and you're so desperately wanting to be able to get married and spend life, and you've got all this life in front of you, but you're not willing to sacrifice what you believe. This is the end, but for me, the beginning of life. Is your life out of check with God? I wrote down here. Is it because all things you're doing, is it because all the things that you're doing are actually getting in the way of doing what you ought to be doing? Are you so dead set on what you want that you're not able to wait for God to teach you what you ought to do? It's a huge struggle. It's a huge maturity issue. It's something that, as I look back, I feel like I'm always growing in it, but I can see as I move forward each year where I grow more and more. I don't know where the limit is, but I'm a long ways from it. This is the end, but for me, the beginning of life. What a beautiful, beautiful way to be able to look forward in terms of patience and waiting on God. Next week, I had a lot more to say this week, so I broke it into 2 weeks. Next week, I'm going to do a call to action. Okay? Because the challenge here is, when do you actually do something, right? And I told you guys, people get frustrated with me, and I think sometimes they're right. Because sometimes I'm too content to wait. Sometimes you've got to move. Sometimes something's got to happen, right? Next week, we're going to do a call to action. But I want you guys to be able to learn and to be able to figure out how to decide where that call is. What are the truly important things in life? As I told you earlier, as you're piecing together, what are these big issues? What are the issues that you're struggling with in life? Be chewing on those this week and thinking about, is there something, is there a sore, is there a wound that you need to focus on next year? Maybe your goal was to accomplish some great task in your life that you've been wanting to do forever, but what you really need to do is fix a festering wound that's somewhere in your life. Maybe this thing you want to do needs to wait, but this other thing that's destroying you needs some action. And how do you know the difference? How do you know the difference, all right? So next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about the marshmallow test. I've got something exciting to show you guys in terms of the marshmallow test. It's a study that was done in just a year ago. That's really, really exciting. So that's the bone I'll leave out there to draw you back. I think with that said, I want to pray. Wish you guys a Merry Christmas. And we will call it a day. So, okay, all right, we're good. So God, waiting is tough. Waiting is tough. Waiting is tough whenever the people around you just don't get it, which is where my mindset is so often. And I want to point at everyone else, and I want to get upset with everyone because they're not doing things the way I want them to do it, as fast as they want them to do. And then waiting's tough when they're looking at me and saying the same thing. God, waiting is tough when there's that festering wound and you don't know how to fix it. God, we ask for patience and we ask for wisdom. God, we ask that on those times when we don't know what to do, that those wise counselors in our lives will be obvious to us, that we can have people that we can go to that will give us the answers we need, and that you'll talk through people, or that we'll talk to you and we'll be able to sense the guidance directly from you. God, as we celebrate Christ's birth in 2 days, God, we ask that that'll be a great day for you and a great day for Christ and a great day for us. God, for those people here that are dreading that day, I ask for peace to be on their life and for them to be able to smile on that day and spread your joy and your love, even though they might be in a situation where that's hard. God, we ask that amongst the gift giving that happens on that day, that you won't be forgotten, and that there'll be a lot of birthday parties for Jesus happening all over the world, and that our kids will get excited to realize that it's not just a day about presents, but it's much bigger than that. It's a day celebrating you. God, we love you. We thank you for everything you've done. We thank you for your Son. Happy birthday. Merry Christmas. Through Christ we pray. Amen. Guys, have a great week.